continue to keep her in your prayers. And CA. Well, I tell you, it was a beautiful day, a wonderful day, an exciting day. Festive laughter and joy was in the air. You could hear the people and the excitement, the smells in Jerusalem. A day beginning Passover week. A week that God's people celebrated, set between two festivals, two religious feasts. They would come together and they would just think about God's faithfulness, His leading. They would worship Him, give Him praise. It was an exciting time, a special day. What was special about this day? What set this Passover week aside, a week that they commemorated and the Jewish people celebrated each year? And actually, it was around this time of year, around the beginning of April, according to our calendar, beginning to mid-April. It all goes back to a special day that took place in the life of Israel some previous 1,400 years before Christ. But before we get into that, let me ask you, what are special days you celebrate? God's given us a memory, and a memory is a good, gracious gift that God has granted us. What are days we celebrate? Times of excitement. Important days, right? Think about, what is it? July 4th, 1776. Independence Day, the birth of our nation. We have several more days on our calendar that's exciting, that are times we set apart to commemorate and celebrate. But in our personal lives, what do we celebrate? Birthdays, that's right, birthdays. Anniversaries, we give God praise. I tell you, there's some a lady back in Calera that she's tried and had several miscarriages, and she's now 40 years old, and the Lord just blessed her with a little baby boy. And I'm telling you, they are beside themselves in the church. We just, everybody's rejoicing with them. And I tell you what, that's going to be a special day every time that little boy has a birthday, right? That's right. What about your children? What about your special days? You celebrate them. As gracious gifts that God's given us, we remember them and we commemorate and we think about the gifts that God's given. Well, that's what's going on here when we think about Passover. We think about a special day in the life of Israel. Now, the life of Israel had a lot of special days. You know, I think back to the birth of Isaac, you know, when God told Abraham and Sarah they were going to have a son and they were so old, and she laughed. She laughed. She couldn't even believe it. She was up in her years, her and Abraham, and she laughed. But God was faithful. Matter of fact, Isaac's name means laughter. You think about the life of Israel, and you think about, you know, soon after the Passover was the parting of the Red Sea. Now, I'm telling you, that would be a day that I would remember, and I guarantee you we would talk about. To see a huge sea open up, and God miraculously open a way of escape for His people to go through on dry ground and then swallow up the enemies, His enemies, once again, by that Red Sea. That's an amazing accomplishment that probably the people of Israel would remember and talk about for years. And even like as they would go into battles, I think about Gideon. You think about Gideon, from the tribe of Manasseh, noted for absolutely nothing, the weakest of the weak. And he's got some a whole number of people, and God gets it on down to about, what, 300 men, wasn't it? 300 men, and it says the Amalekite, or the Midianites there in the valley below were as numerous as the sand on the seashore, the grasshoppers on the hills. I mean, just hundreds of thousands of brave warriors, and Gideon is now surrounding them with 300 men. And God works an amazing miracle, and those people get up, and after they hear those jars breaking and they see the lights flickering, they think they're surrounded on every side by these 300 men, and they get up in the darkness and they go to swinging those swords and sticking each other. And when all is said and done, 300 people has accomplished an amazing victory for the nation of Israel. Now, that's something that was probably talked about for years and years and years. What about David and Goliath, the little shepherd boy that goes out after being challenged for 40 days by this huge giant, the little shepherd boy who was bringing his brothers some cheese and bread to give a message from the father and to receive a message from the sons. He sees what's going on and he cannot believe that they are defying the living God. And he says, the same God that could deliver me from this lion and bear will deliver us from the hands of this Philistine. He says, let me at him. And this little shepherd boy marches out there with a few stones and he whirls a slingshot and hits the great big giant right between the eyes. Now that's something that Israel probably talked about for many, many, many years. We serve a powerful, mighty God. And this Passover was a display of God's power and his care for his people. I just read it to you, but I want to now take you to a few verses. We're going to kind of look at 13, 14, and 15 about Exodus 12. And we're going to start out looking at God's judgment on the enemies. Let's look at what happened. Before we talk about how they memorialized the day, let's talk just a minute about what happened. First off, God provided a way of escape for his people, but he executed judgment on his enemies. Now, this is the world power. If you remember how they got into Egypt some 400 years before, remember God had used Joseph, who would in a sovereign role of God's leading, who would be sold into slavery and then go into prison and then back up in the ranks and would become prime minister of Egypt. And God placed him there to minister to his brothers and the nation of Israel. And the famine was so bad, God used Joseph to bring his people, to set them up there. Well, after the Pharaoh died there, after that one in charge died, they kind of forgot about Joseph. And they forgot about the promises. And they forgot some of the commitments they made. And so next thing you know, these people they're multiplying and they're growing, but as the different rulers come in, they oppress the people. And they begin to use them to build their buildings and to make Egypt great. And so 400 years, these people were oppressed in slavery. I mean, just worked hard, treated badly. But God begins to work. And then through a series of events, Moses, who is a Hebrew boy, placed in the bulrushes so he wouldn't be killed, finds his way up next to Pharaoh's daughter and begins to be schooled in the finest institutions of Egypt. He begins to walk the finest streets on the planet. He begins to be around the notable people. But God burdened his heart and said, I would rather be with my people in slavery than to be identified with the people of Egypt. And God began to call this man who would stutter and who would speak not very clearly at times. God began to move in his heart and call him out for a great purpose. And even after a setback, Moses goes off to live with his father-in-law. Now, I love my father-in-law, but I don't really want to go herd sheep with my father-in-law in the wilderness for 40 years. That's what Moses did. He went and worked in the hot desert for 40 years, but the whole time God was preparing him and raising him up and training him. And then it was time where God, in that day of the burning bush in Exodus 3, he sees the holiness of God, and God speaks to him in a very real way and says, I want to use you to go and to deliver my people out of bondage and out of captivity. And after Moses says, no, not me, you got the wrong person. And after the little bargaining and the talks, God graciously allows his brother Aaron to come and to be the spokesperson. And God begins to use them immediately. And through a series of events, they show that of God's power, just through a rod that becomes a serpent. And God shows that he's going to bless Moses and Aaron, and he's going to use them. And Moses pretty quickly begins to tell Pharaoh that you need to let God's people go. And Pharaoh would laugh, and he would laugh, and he would laugh. And Moses would go back again and say, you need to let God's people go. And God begins to send a series of plagues on this people of Egypt. It started with things like I'm not going to get them all right because I didn't go back and look at the different plagues. I know what they are. And through rivers of blood, through boils, through locusts, through flies, through frogs, through all of these just miraculous displays of judgment God places on these people for not listening, it says over and over again that God continued, that Pharaoh hardened his heart. And even more so, in God's sovereign plan, for some reason, it says, look at the end of verse 12. It says, if you want to go back to the end of chapter 11, Moses, the very last verse of chapter 11, Moses and Aaron did all these wonders before Pharaoh, and the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he did not let the people of Israel go out of his land. It's the same, it's like almost the theme in Judges that continues, said the people continually did evil in the sight of the Lord. For these series of about 10 or 12 chapters, at the end of every chapter, we continue to see, and God hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he did not let the people of Israel go out of his land. Now, I don't know what God's up to, but I know he's up to something. Because he's working, and he's moving, and he's bringing judgment, but Pharaoh's heart is still hard. We serve a God that's so powerful, he even controls the great rulers of the land. And then we get to chapter 12, and we see the 10th and final plague. It comes after 3 days of darkness. Now, many of you might be like my kids and might be a little bit scared of darkness. During these 3 days of darkness, we think that this could have been a preparation time. And when the Lord started kind of speaking to Israel and telling them how they're going to observe this Passover. But they begin to prepare for something that God was going to do to set them free, to go out of this captivity and this oppression into the wilderness, going toward this promised land. And God was going to make a covenant with his people. He was going to set up a ways for them to worship. And he was going to display his love and his grace and kindness. And they were going to worship Yahweh, Elohim, the creator and covenant God of Israel. They were going to get to know him in an even more personal way as they were led by a pillar of fire at night and a cloud during the day. God was going to show his gracious provision and his protection for them. But we see now in this time, look at verse Exodus 12, verse 13. We're going to start seeing, Exodus 12, verse 12. First off, let's look at God's judgment on Egypt. For I will pass through the land of Egypt that night, and I will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and on the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment. I am the Lord. So we see in this final judgment, number 10, we see the death of the firstborn. We see the death of the firstborn. Now, what was special about this? I mean, what was huge about this? You know, the firstborn was held important position in the family and society. The firstborn not only would inherit double portion of the father's estate, but he represented qualities of life and strength. And also in Egypt, the firstborn would ascend to the throne and continue the dynasty. Firstborn was special. Well, on this night, God had given specific ways for Israel at twilight to take a lamb for their household. The man of the house was supposed to take a lamb, and he was supposed to slaughter it. And he was going to put the blood on the top of the door and on the lintels of the door. They were going to take the remainder of the animal, and they were going to eat it. They were to roast it. Many of the foreign pagan deities would in their celebrations, they would eat raw meat. Right? They were to roast the head, the legs, and the entrails of the animal. They were to eat it as a special meal together. They would eat it, and then morning, they would burn whatever they did not eat. There was also some other specific ways. It could be a sheep or a goat. It was to be 1 year old with no defects. It was on the 14th day of the month. Each family must slaughter their animal, their lamb. They would smear the blood on the door frames we mentioned. And they would also eat the roasted lamb with bitter herbs and unleavened bread. Bread made without yeast. Whatever you don't eat, as I said, it would be burned. But here's, they were also to eat it in haste. They were supposed to be ready. Their belt was supposed to be fastened. Their shoes were supposed to be on their feet, their staff in their hand, and they would eat this meal in haste. And they were not to come outside through the night. And as they celebrated and as they were protected by the blood of that lamb, the death angel, the executioner, would go throughout all of Egypt, whether it was a slave girl or whether it was Pharaoh, the firstborn in every household would be killed. Verses 29 and 30. Look with me at chapter 12, verses 29 and 30. It says, at midnight, the Lord struck down all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sat on his throne to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of the livestock. Now, Zach's not here with us this morning. He's working. He works at a funeral home. Can you imagine how busy he would be? It says that there was someone that died in every household. Every household. It goes on to say, look at verse 30. And Pharaoh rose up in the night, and he and all his servants and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt. Listen to this. And there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where someone was not dead. There was a cry and a wailing and a weeping and a sorrow over Egypt like there had never been. The God, the one true and living God of Israel, is now had enough. And he's bringing judgment on these pagan deities, all the gods of Egypt. Now, there's a theological importance here. And we see the impotence of the pagan gods. By the death of this firstborn, the impotence of the pagan deities, many of whom were represented by animals to protect their devotees from such nationwide tragedies. So we see these pagan gods, but were they able to protect against the death of the firstborn? No, they were impotent. They were without power. God shows his great power in this death of the firstborn. It was a great cry and grief. And this revealed the incapability of their nation's gods to protect them. We first see as God is going to, this special day that Israel is going to see God's deliverance from slavery, we first see the execution of the gods of Egypt. We see the execution of the firstborn and God showing his power over all the pagan deities. Secondly, we saw that God passes over his own. Look at verse 13 of chapter 12. So the first 12 of chapter, verse 12, we saw that he struck and the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, the gods of Egypt, he executes judgment. He says, I am the Lord. Now look at verse 13. The blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you. And no plague will befall you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. The blood will be a sign. This morning we sang, are you washed in the blood? We sing nothing but the blood. The blood will never lose its power. Let me tell you, this death angel, this executioner, this messenger from God was looking for the blood of the Lamb. He was looking for that blood that served as a sacrifice. He served as a protector of the firstborn of the families of Israel. And so that took faith of the people of Israel to carry out this. There were specific ways that they were to take the lamb without blemish. They were to slaughter it. They were to save some of it to feast on through the night, but they were to take hyssop, and they were to outline the tops and the sides of the doorpost. And as the death angel came through, he looked
for the blood of the Lamb. And only the door